Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Winners Coming Game of Thrones podcast. Tonight we're going to be talking about Game of Thrones, the series finale. Last week was the year anniversary, right, Dan? The end of it?
Yeah.
So, we didn't get a chance to record last week, so we're going to talk about it this week. We've got a lot of good things to mention. With me tonight is Dan Selke, editor-in-chief of Winners Coming, and Corey Thone. As always, Corey Smith will barge in later, and I'm sure throw down some hot takes. That'll be fun. But so for now, let's get started. And Corey Thone, I always, even though it may not seem like it, I always enjoy your hot takes about season 8. And it's no secret that you weren't a fan. In fact, am I correct in saying you weren't a fan going back to season 7?
Season 7 got a lot of slack because we all said, you know, if they land season 8, then it'll be fine. You know, we said a lot of that. I mean, going back to season 5, really, because I know after season 5, we all were like, wow, this season was all over the place. What the hell was that all about? And then
we took a dump on season 5 is what we did.
Yeah, and then season 6, you know, I'm not one of those people that pretends that season 6 wasn't good. For the most part, it was fine. It had some great episodes and some really great moments. A lot of that buildup came from, you know, previous seasons, but still, whatever. Like it was still good. But yeah, season 7 wasn't very good. We talked a lot about how dumb some of the stuff was while it was happening, but we always caveated that with, whatever, they got to get the pieces all in the Westeros and then we can get the last season, you know. And then, you know, the last season just, yeah,
petered out a little bit.
Peter's not, you don't peter out of that budget. That budget, you know, for those limited number of episodes, you know, that's not a petering out. That's a fucking bonfire.
Would that be a King's Landing bonfire or like, a Shireen being
it was the, it was bonfire. It was the biggest fire that nerds had ever seen. And I know that, you know, again, I don't want to, I've moved on into it. I mean, I honestly, like many other people, I mean, fuck guys, you guys write for Winners. You guys are the Winners Coming team. So like Game of Thrones was a big part in all of our lives. And I luckily, however you want to look at it, didn't have to keep writing about it and covering it because I would have never been able to get over it if I had to keep talking about it every week. I know that sounds bad.
God. No, it's right. You're absolutely right. 100%.
But as I've softened a little bit on the season to the extent that the performances within them were actually pretty good considering what they were given to read. So I feel bad, honestly, for all of us. The fans and the actors, the people that spent what, however many 60 nights straight working, you know, to watch an episode that was filmed in front of a fucking black canvas. Like, I feel bad for a lot of stuff. Yeah, all the lights are on. I don't know. And again, I don't want to ramble. I'm kind of rambling, so I'll just say that I have not turned a corner on finding the positives yet. Let's say that.
Dan, when you and I and Mia were talking about this on Take the Black Alive last week, I surprisingly found out that I am all up in my feels about it. I'm still not over it. I'm not ready to address everything about the seasons. And that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it this week. Like, how we kind of talked about it a little bit last week, but we talked about not watching the season yet. I haven't rewatched the season yet. Have you?
I haven't, no. I probably will soon. You did seem pretty angry and had a lot of emotion. We talked about that last time. Just for the anniversary. I kind of realized too that I, maybe because I'm still engaging with it occasionally, wasn't quite over it. Because, you know, just because we were in it for so long, you know? We were like in the thick of it for a while. It takes a while to emotionally grapple. I like talking about that. I felt like I was turning a corner a bit. I mean, look, we're never going to say the final season was great because it really wasn't. I, I don't think it's about realizing season 8 was wonderful so much as it is putting some of the stinging feelings aside and moving past them, which I think I'm finally doing now a year later. So great.
You're finally untangling a year
later. There weren't good things about it, just it was so like bundled up with expectation and emotional investment that it did take a while for me to kind of work up the nerve to really revisit it. And I feel like I am. I feel like I'm looking it in the eye. I feel like I'm healing. I feel like I'm growing. And I feel like I'll soon be ready to kind of maybe even watch the season or the show again, maybe just one more way through. And then kind of finally open my heart to something else.
Listen to you being all professionally adult about it. I could never... I don't think I honestly think I'm emotionally stunted when it comes to this, because there are times where I go, fuck you guys, this season 8 was good, you used to refuse to look at the positives. And there are times where I'm like, fuck D&D, they ruined the greatest show on earth. And Corey Smith, you just joined us, and thanks for having the time to in your busy day to be on this podcast. We really appreciate your professionalism and being on time all the time. Anyway, before we get into your feelings about this show and maybe even the final couple of seasons, I know that there's something more important that you kind of wanted to mention before we started, and I think it has to do with KFC. Am I wrong or am I right?
Wait, no, fuck this. We're not going to pivot.
Succession?
We are pivoting, god
damn it. We're
not going
to pivot into KFC or Succession. We're still talking about Game of Thrones. This is Winter is Coming. We're going to lead off with Game of Thrones.
This is Take the Black, and we are going classic Take the Black. We are talking Cheeto chicken sandwiches, or we're not talking at all.
Oh, god damn it.
Well, it just seems like a normal chicken sandwich. There's not a whole lot to talk about.
Okay, fine. If we're doing this, fine. Listen, the chicken wars are fucking over, KFC. You weren't even a player.
It's too late.
You were the fucking Manderleys. Like, no one knows anything about you. You were just fat and loud and bearded for one scene, and then you're gone. Like, no one cares. The chicken wars, the battle of the clucksters is over. It happened. Popeyes won. Chick-fil-A, I mean, they didn't lose. They're still crushing it. But, like, Chick-fil-A is, I guess, second. And then every other sandwich chain that tried it out. I mean, Wendy's is a solid third in my mind. And,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a chicken sandwich from other places. Like, Zaxby's. I like Zaxby's, but their sandwiches are whack. But, actually, you know what? Scratch that. I would say Wendy's is fourth. Slim Chicken's Cayenne Ranch chicken sandwich is second behind Popeye's, or behind Popeye's. And then, anyway, so regardless, the chicken wars are over, KFC. You coming out with a standard sandwich, and yeah, I know that they're like, oh, we made the pickles bigger, we made the breading thicker, and it's on a brioche bun. Fuck off. Like, it's over. It still comes with your shit-ass JoJo potatoes and Pepsi. So get out of my life.
Fucking Pepsi. That's exactly right. And you know, I'll even go on top of that. The Slim Chickens, they have the edge because they're goddamn macaroni, and you can't mention Slim Chicken's chicken without mentioning their macaroni and cheese. So there, I'll put it right
there. It may not be the best chicken and waffles, but you find the other drive-through place for chicken and waffles.
Amen. Amen to that. All right, now that we got that out of our system, I feel better, honestly. I feel great.
Honestly, I think Smith accidentally dropped out, so he missed all that. And that's fine, because he probably would have been like, you're forgetting about Whataburger. Like,
no, dude. I'm not a Whataburger fan. Sorry.
No. He Corey Smith would have been, well, there's a place here in Austin where I live. If I told you guys I live in Austin.
Yeah. It's the local place. They have one spot, and they only make chicken, and they have a small. It's like, yeah, I bet it's pretty good. It's like, if, you know, there's lots of places around the country that do one thing.
Oh, God.
Just because
we are
there
going
a bridge
classic.
That bats shit on doesn't mean I'm supposed to care about it, Smith.
Yes, we can.
I'm not a Whataburger fan. They do good breakfast and that's it. Well, otherwise, no thanks. They do good breakfast. So, anyways, no, KFC's way late to the party, and they can.
Yeah, it's KFC and McDonald's both are about to roll out these new sandwiches. And to be honest, if you're not following, there's some really great Instagram accounts you can follow for upcoming like snack junk food and shit like that. And it's all pretty interesting because you get to see the stuff that gets released like limited spots. Like, oh, only Jupiter, Florida gets to try the cranberry garlic Sprite, you know, whatever the fuck they're and so yeah, it's McDonald's also has a
thing. And then fat asses like us drive to Jupiter, Florida to try it out.
Like in the I spent one summer following the McRib around the Pacific Northwest for like a Grateful Dead fan.
God damn.
But yeah, it's so but McDonald's, you know, whatever. Like your chicken's also like if the nugget or nothing to me. I don't care about your chicken. And then I remember when you tried to push those strips and charge an extra $3 for what was just basically someone took two chicken nuggets and sat on them and made them longer. I'm not falling for that shit. You know who I respect in all this, honestly? Who I respect in all this is Burger King. And I hate Burger King. I think it might be the worst food chain in the country. It's up there with Sbarro to me. Like, I fucking hate it. But all they did, they were like, we can't win this war, so we're going to take a really crappy spicy chicken patty and charge a buck for it. And I'm like, you know what? I respect the knowledge of yourself, Burger King.
Burger King was like this. They were like, hey, listen, we know that we're not in this war. We're going to back out, and we're going to color the Whopper green. Enjoy your green shit. And happy Halloween, fuckos.
Happy Halloween, fucker.
Oh my god, Dan! This is what you missed during the season by not recording with us. By the way, I know you had to have missed this.
Oh crap!
I listened to all of it. I know you guys talk about. I didn't know there was a chicken war. Why would you go to a McDonald's and not order like a Big Mac? This is beyond.
Thank you.
That's the only thing I don't order at McDonald's.
Nah, I love a Big Mac.
Point of order.
I mean, I of course order a Big Mac. Big Macs. Anyway,
double quarter pounder.
How fun.
Listen, Smith, let's get into Game of Thrones. Although I got to give it to Phone, the Manderly comparison was fucking fantastic, man. Outstanding, my friend. Outstanding. So, Corey Smith, when somebody says Game of Thrones to you, and I know you said, I think you put a tweet out a couple weeks ago, where you said, I don't suggest anybody watches Game of Thrones. If my friends ask me what to watch, I'm never telling them Game of Thrones. No,
that wasn't me.
I'm pretty sure it was you.
If it was, I was very drunk. I wouldn't say never watch it, but season 8 is obviously a letdown. So, I mean, it's still one of my more favorite shows, but season 8 really took a lot of, you know, a lot of wind out of the sails, so to speak. So, I mean, I think I echo you guys' thoughts. It's just, you know, it was, there were some great moments, great performances, but the road to get there was so shoddy that it kind of, you know, overshot everything else. And so you couldn't really pay attention to some of the great performances. It's not like Peter Dinklage forgot how to act, right? You know what I mean? It just, you know, but the rest of the shit was just so terrible that it was hard to focus on that because you're so busy, you know, picking everything else apart. And it really, I just don't understand why they decided to do 6 episodes. I'll never understand that.
It does come down to a shortened season, doesn't it? Sometimes.
Yeah. I think that because, I mean, all of our arguments, a lot of it, they all boil down to it all felt rushed and a lot of this didn't make sense. And I feel like if we'd just gotten a few more episodes, it would have been everything had more time to breathe, whether it was Daenerys's turn, Jamie and Brienne's one night stand romance, whatever the fuck that was.
Hooray, romance.
Yeah, like all that would have, if we'd had another, you know, like, how much better would, like, just take Jamie and Brienne's thing, which isn't, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, a big consequence. But, you know, how much better would that have felt if it had lasted 2 to 3 episodes? You know what I mean?
Can I ask a question to the group? Because I had this conversation with some other friends on Zoom not that long ago who knew, they were all Game of Thronesers as well. How much did catering to fans... Is Game of Thrones a case study in why you don't cater strictly to fan service?
Oh, I think no. Oh, I think if they catered to fan service, they would have got John Daenerys hooked up in King and Queen.
Okay, but...
I'd say, I do... I mean, look, I don't want to, like, pick at a wound, which I feel like it's already kind of a lost cause.
I brought my Neosporin. We're fine.
I had all these high-minded plans, and they all went out the window with the chicken.
Oh, yeah, I can approach that. I mean, I agree with everybody else. You know, not really paced properly, more episodes. I do maybe even more now, respect the idea of not going for the fan service and having the person you've come to love be a genocidal monster. I don't think there's a lot of fan service. Like, what is supposed to be fan service about anything that happened?
I think that's, to me, that is... What happened is they were told by Martin, this is how the book's going to end. At the very end, you know, we're going to have this build where Danny goes crazy and, you know, the dragons get picked off one by one and all these other things, right? And then within those high points they were given is where the fan service came in. Like, they worked so hard, for example, to work Bronn into this last season when he was useless. Or like Smith said, Jaime and Brienne hooking up is actually, could, you know, they did that to themselves, where they had to have Jaime and Brienne hook up or people would be furious, and instead of not having that happen and just having Jaime get really close to hooking up with Brienne and then, oh, I can't do it, and going back to you know, Cersei or whatever, would have made more sense for his character than banging Brienne and then not staying. Like, the there was so, or the, I mean, shit, the Hound versus the Mountain. Like, again, no sense.
They wanted that.
Those are all things that fans wanted, these moments, right? And they worked really hard. Well, I wouldn't say really hard. They worked to fit them into their story that was also hitting Martin's high points of where characters were going to end up. And I think that they did themselves a disservice in the end. Like, we'd be looking back and saying, you know, it kind of makes sense that Jaime and I mean, there'd be people who are mad about it. You certainly had Jaime and Brienne shippers that would have been mad no matter what. But, like, it makes sense that Jaime and Brienne didn't actually hook up because he never actually could get over Cersei. And instead, he, you know, banged her, and then the next day is like, oh, I'm going to load this horse up. And it's like, man, but what was the point of banging her then? Like, there were lots of moments like that that I feel that they included in there for the fans that actually ended up, once you stack them one by one by one, is what caused the tower to tip even harder, if that makes sense.
Okay, but
it's hard to know, like, what was included for fans, though. I mean, for all we know, Martin told him Jaime and Brienne has sex and then he leaves her. I mean, I agree with you, Corey Smith, though, that even, like, another episode, like, if they slept together and then, like, he left the next episode, it would have kind of given it more room to breathe.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It was all contained in one, like, 5 minutes, and it's just...
I mean...
They worked so hard giving her the respect she deserved in Night of the Seven Kingdoms to take it away for them to have sex and to be left there at Winterfell while he goes...
And then she gets the top job. It's not like her story's over there, but I mean... At the end of the day, even if I do think they kind of started with a conclusion rather than, you know, a path forward. Like, they started to, we need to get to Dany burning the city or get to Cleane Bowl, and we'll kind of figure out how we get there on the way and not really put a lot of effort into it. But I just think it's really, really hard to call it a fan service season when the climax is the hero commits genocide.
Especially when season 7 had Ed Sheeran in it, right?
Yeah.
And then you had Arya kills all of House Frey in one fell swoop, which I loved. Like, I love that. Who didn't love that? But, and you know, there were a lot of things they did. And I know that people say they had a lot of problems in season 7. I enjoyed season 7, frankly. I enjoyed it. I can see why people didn't like season 8. I get that. I didn't enjoy the long night. Like, Bone said, being filmed behind a black screen. Like, I did not like that at all. I liked Arya killing the Night King. I liked the whole subvert expectations thing. I get that. Fine. It was fine. I was enjoying that. But what I hated, I fucking hated the fact that Rhaegal had to die. Why the and how the fuck did he die? Okay? I wasn't going to go here, guys. But God
can
damn
I just,
it.
Let me just say, before we pivot too far away from my statement, you guys are right. I was wrong. I phrased that incorrectly. My statement should have been more about, like, finding ways to fit in fan service, I think, like the Clegane Bowl and stuff. If you go back and watch season 7 and 8, like, there are so many moments that logically maybe don't make sense, but there are moments that we've been waiting to see, kind of, that I think add up to create a foundation of sand for the towers that are the non-fan service, like, you know what I mean? Like, the Dany and Jon not killing the Night King and everything. I think there's just so many things about those last two seasons that just stack up to so many different disappointments.
At the same time, like, had they pulled off Dany burning the place?
Oh, man.
And made me believe it, I would have forgiven everything. Absolutely. I really do think that.
It's just like, it's funny you bring up stick the landing. It's just like the Olympics, right? In the fucking Olympics.
God, here comes the Texan talking about Kerry Strug. If you mention Kerry Strug, we're blocking you.
No. But I couldn't have remembered her name until you said that. But yeah,
the
name dropper
couldn't remember a name. You get out of here.
Sorry, my bad. But yeah, it wasn't what happened, it was how it happened. And that's what we're all upset about. Like, I would have loved the show, because the show started off by subverting expectations, right? So I have no problem with them continuing to do that throughout the whole series, up until the point of Dany turning into a genocidal maniac. But it's how they did it that was the issue. And I think that's what we're most pissed off about, is how it happened, and that it wasn't allowed to breathe, and that it all felt rushed for no reason whatsoever. That's the point I keep coming back to, is why did it have to be rushed?
And that was some of your stronger points during the season when we were recording every week. I remember you saying that, and that's a valid point. My question to the group is this, since we're kind of on this topic a little bit, and I'll chill off the Rhaegal and the ghost stuff. I won't mention that stuff, but I'll go to let me ask this question. You got Jon Snow coming back to life in season 6. You had him killing Ramsay, and, you know, or he didn't kill Ramsay, but he brought him low so Sansa could finish him off. You had a lot of moments leading up to season 8, but we didn't really get we had Clegane Bowl, but there really wasn't the excitement. There wasn't big moments with big payoffs that we were looking for. Jon, you know, there was a whole fan base that everybody thought Jon was going to kill the Night King. They didn't even cross swords, right? Like, they didn't even get a chance to fight each other. And they built that whole Jon Snow. He's the chosen one. He's got the Valyrian steel long blade sword. And he's already killed a couple of White Walkers. And he's the perfect man to kill the Night King. And that didn't happen. So that was the subversion of the expectations. We didn't have the big payoff. I enjoyed the Arya kill personally. But there were a lot of other things that happened. Like, Jon basically didn't have anything. Really, he got to ride a dragon around for a couple episodes. Yippee-ki-yay. That's fun. In the sack of King's Landing, what did he do? He walked around and killed some people and then left, right? So there really wasn't a lot of big payoffs. So my question to you guys is, we have all the payoffs leading up to season 8. Do you think the fact that we didn't have the big season 8 payoffs is another reason that the season kind of fell flat for a lot of people?
Yes, and the poster child for the non-payoffs is fucking Cersei. Because she was a fantastic fucking character, played by an incredible actress who did absolutely jack shit in season 8, and they wasted that character, and waste is the best word I can think to describe it. They just fucking wasted all that time building that incredible character up that just never quit and always sought power regardless of what it cost her, and then just sat on a balcony. And that's fucking bullshit. Why? Again, why? Why? What was the point of building that character up to that point if you're just going to have her do shit?
Arguably the main villain of Game of Thrones, right? Arguably.
Yeah, and a villain also that to a certain extent you always sympathize with because she was just passed around as a means to power, you know, and she kept getting put down. And yes, she did terrible things, but on some level, I think you could sympathize with her because she was tired of being told because she was a woman, she couldn't hold power and that she was just a means to an end for men to hold power. And so to see her just sidelined for, again, no fucking reason, just was infuriating because, especially with, again, Lena Headey playing that character. I mean, she's incredible. She's super talented. And you did not utilize well, her talents at all.
It's a good thing she brought the Golden Company over, right? Am I right?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, you talk about, unrealized. I mean, Cersei is the poster child for that because she did nothing.
They were taken out in the very beginning of the worst slaughter in the show has ever seen. Like, Harry Strickland, remember, okay, Dan, I'm going to ask you this, Dan. Remember all the theory posts you had about Harry Strickland? Like, is it going to follow the books? Are there going to be elephants? Are we going to be really fucking excited about this? And then for them to be, like, blown away, like, just destroyed at the beginning of that battle was comical to an extent. that's just another, like, way to say, fuck you, we're not giving you what you want this season?
Honestly, I don't remember a lot of posts about that. I mean, you've got you have to look at, like, if we're talking about that, you look at what you expect from what they've given. I mean, I've been really liking them with They Get Decimated. It was pretty funny. I mean, we had no investment, in Harry Strickland.
There was no investment. So
I'm not really sure why people would expect to get something.
I guess maybe I'm talking from a book perspective because we really kind of sunk. We're invested in him in the book. Maybe I'm talking from a book perspective. Maybe that's where my problem is.
I feel like we're doing a lot of wound picking. I hope the Neosporin is keeping up.
This is a podcast.
I'm out of Neosporin. It's gone.
Damn.
No, and I agree with Dan. We're doing a lot of wound picking here, and I don't think this is what people really want to hear. They either want to hear us rant and rave and be pissed the fuck off about it, or just talk about the impact. Like, if we honestly, the real question is at this point, a year out, what is the legacy of Game of Thrones? You know, like how did the final season or two seasons, but let's just say final season, really impact that? Because I don't, for a show that literally was its own cottage industry and was maybe the last water cooler show in existence with streaming and everything, I feel like it's if you know, remember when Avatar was really big and then like a year later everybody was like, what was that called? Oh, Avatar? Like, obviously Game of Thrones is not that bad. People remember it still. Like, obviously it was a super important show.
Sure.
But I feel like it's lost some of that staying power that we all just assumed it was going to have in the zeitgeist of prestige TV.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's really, really interesting. I mean, like, I remember before the final season, folk were saying, like, is it like a new Star Wars type, franchise? And I mean, Star Wars is so singular and interesting and different, but I do feel like no one really talks about it in that scale anymore. Partially because I don't think a lot of folk, like, are eager to see what happens next, you know? But, like, the way they might have been after Return of the Jedi or whatever. We have the spinoff coming, which will be a proving ground for it. We can't know until it happens. But, yeah, I would say there's been a deflating of the balloon, which, of course, there's always going to be. But, for example, like, Avatar The Last Airbender is a show that ran, like, a decade ago on Nickelodeon. And it just got back on Netflix, and folk are, like, going back to rewatch it, all this stuff. They're, like, it's all around the Twitter sphere, the internet, talking about how great it was.
Yeah, trendy top.
I mean, maybe in a decade that'll come back around like that for Game of Thrones, but right now it's hard to see that way forward.
Oh, I have a great point to that. Bone, when we talked about Star Wars, you and I had a podcast where we talked about the prequels, how everybody is like prequel apologists now.
Yeah, it pisses me off.
True.
Do you think season 8 will ever get to that status?
Fuck, it might. It's there's probably some meme worthy. That's what happened. It's okay. I don't want to talk about politics, so I won't talk about another subreddit that I think this happened in. But prequel memes is a great example of, and I forget the name of, if I Googled it, if I took some time, I could find it. But the idea that it was started by people as a joke, as like, haha, the prequels are so shit. Look at the dumb memes we can make out of just screen caps from it. It was a bunch of high ground memes and everything else that morphed into a bunch of people going back, and then they started to appreciate the movies for the memes. Then the people that started it know the prequels are bad. But the people now in 2020 that are taking part in this meme stuff with the prequels, they don't think the movies are bad. It also has happened with Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies. And now the first two are fine, but the third one is absolute trash. But people defend it and make memes out of it. It's weird to see it happen. It could happen with Game of Thrones. The problem is that Game of Thrones for 6 seasons was considered one of the best shows of all time and has a billion Emmys and, you know, was a cultural phenomenon, whereas the prequels were critically ripped from the jump, and, you know, the Raimi Spider-Man movies all were fine. You know, I don't know if Game of Thrones as a whole is bad enough to be redeemed by meme culture.
Ooh, that's really fascinating. I bet, I've always said, there will be like in 5 years, maybe like 3 or 4, a bunch of think pieces looking back and reanalyzing the final season in kind of like a, I don't know, for some reason I see a turnaround in the analysis of it. But it'll... Well, that'll be like on the high-minded blog of Solana sphere anyway. So I don't think it really.
It'll be after the first season of House of Dragon comes out. At the end of the first season, people will start thinking about, ooh, remember when Game of Thrones did this? And they'll start comparing this and that, and that's when you'll have your revival.
You have an article, How Cersei Lannister's Sideline Actually Made a Lot of Sense.
Yeah, that kind of thing, eventually.
But you know, the crazy thing about the prequel is, even if half of the people that watched Game of Thrones watched the prequel, the show's still going to be successful as shit, right?
I mean, they'll turn in for, like, the premiere. I mean...
I know, but I'm saying if they only retain half of the audience that the original show had, that's still successful as fuck, because Game of Thrones, you know, numbers were... You know, insanely huge. So, I mean, they'll be happy just to get half of the fans.
I mean,
and I think they will, as long as the show is, you know, decent.
It's this big question mark, right? I mean, we just don't know how it'll do. I mean, I think folk will turn up for the premiere, definitely. But at the end of the day, if the show, it's gotta
be. I just meant, right? As far as I don't think people will let the original show, the taste that the original show left, prevent them from watching any kind of prequel, as long as the prequel is good. Yeah, I mean, the show has to be good regardless, but I'm just saying, I think there's a large segment that are still going to tune in to watch the prequel regardless of how they felt about how season 8 and season 7 ended.
It's going to be a fun litmus test come 2024.
Yeah.
Is that when it is?
No, but they haven't even... I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't even cast it or...
Okay.
Get too far in the weeds on this topic, but think about this. Think about the show's basically all dragons. House of the Dragon is about, you know, House Targaryen in its peak, when there were tons of dragons and massive armies going across the land fighting each other in this huge civil war. Yeah, they're going to be filming that first season forever.
There's going to be a lot of shots of people talking outdoors with a roar in the background.
Yeah, their post-production schedule is going to be a lot longer than the original series was. So,
So yeah, so we could say that we'll have to figure out in a few years where Game of Thrones lands in the, I don't know, where people think about it then, and as far as pop culture goes. But now, I remember us talking last year in all the recap podcasts we were doing, and we were like, I don't know that any show, even with this bad season, I don't know that there's going to be any show that can come out and do what Game of Thrones did. And we were talking about, what, The Witcher, and we were talking about The Last Kingdom's new season, we were talking about Vikings, and about Lord of the Rings coming up from Amazon, Wheel of Time. And now that we've got some of these shows that have already hit some of these streaming services and some of these networks, where can you find right now, Dan, can you look back at the shows that have come out since season one's finale, our season eight's finale? Can you point to any of those shows and go, this show prospered from Game of Thrones, or it was hurt by Game of Thrones?
I will say this. I think a lot of those shows did find audiences, even if they didn't like blow up. Like The Witcher, I didn't really love, but like that definitely found an audience. It found people who liked it. The closest one that I can think of, or like Historic Materials, I thought was like kind of whatever, but it did find an audience. The closest show that I think kind of did the best following up Game of Thrones was The Mandalorian. I thought that was, I mean, it wasn't like Game of Thrones in a lot of ways, but that was kind of the way it was. Like, it felt new and different and interesting and kind of more old fashioned in a way, but also it was, kind, know, it was high kind of production value, different setting. So I'd say that's the one that did the best to unite a lot of people and inspire some enthusiasm. And they're trying to follow it up pretty quickly. So I don't know if we're ever, I kind of hate the phrase, honest to God, like it's the last water cooler show. Like, you don't know that. Who the hell knows what's going to catch on? No one's expecting this to catch on. But
And
I think a lot of these shows so far have found niches for themselves, which is a good sign.
But I also think we can, when we start talking about water cooler, we have to eliminate any shows that dump the entire season and on the same day. So you've got it.
I mean, Stranger Things kind of comes close to people talking a lot about it when it premieres.
Yeah, but not for the same length of time. And I think that's what part of it is, the buildup. And we've talked about this regarding other shows, but just I don't think any show will ever. Yeah, we might have another great water cooler show, but I think it's pretty safe to say that it has to be a weekly released show. Even if it's like two episodes a week or something like that, but like the entire season dropping one day and you watched it all. I mean, fucking Razor watches a season in like half a day. You know what I mean?
This so is like, not a lie.
Yeah. So like, you know, like I follow your Twitter feed when you're doing a rewatch of a series and you get through a series faster than I get through one season of a show. And so I'm just, which is fine, but I'm saying, how are we supposed to relate on the different moments, you know what I mean?
Hashtag no kid life.
Right, exactly. Because but when you have a weekly release schedule, that's what builds up the anticipation and, you know, can, you know, lead to that water cooler thing. And my second point would be that I don't know what show benefited the most from Game of Thrones going off the air, but I will say most of those shows that we just mentioned were only around because of Game of Thrones. So I think that's important.
Completely,
You know what I mean? To know, like, The Witcher doesn't get made unless Game of Thrones is the huge, you know, worldwide hit.
And maybe,
you know,
it mean?
or some of these shows get made on a much smaller budget and scale and all that stuff. So I just think, you know, we can't, I know we shit on season 7 and 8, but we can't, you cannot understate the impact Game of Thrones had on television in general. And I mean, fucking mega corporations like Amazon saw Game of Thrones success and said, we want into the television business. You know what I mean?
We want to hire Game of Thrones writers to come do lore for Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Right. We literally want to enter into this business because of how good this show is. We have no experience whatsoever. We fucking ship things to people and we overcharge them for asparagus at our stores, and now they want to make Lord of the Rings shows. That is 100% because of Game of Thrones. So I we cannot understate that. Regardless of how shitty season 8 was, you've got companies like that, that, you know, or Disney Plus is probably around because of Game of Thrones.
This was so singular and different, its own thing. I feel like Mandalorian probably would have happened regardless.
The rest cultural impact, regardless of how well the final season worked, can't be understated.
Corey Phone, I'm thinking about a show that the last time I've seen you say favorable things about other shows. I see you talk favorably about Rick and Morty. I see you talk about other things, but like the last time I saw you or heard you really get into how excited you were about a show as it was happening each week was Watchmen. And I would be interested to find out how much money HBO has thrown at Lindelof just to beg him to come back and make a season two.
I hope he doesn't, man. Stick it. Just you.
What a fucking gangster, right?
Yeah, you talk about some baller shit. Like, to just make that, to say what you wanted to say. You know, you left that ending a little vague, just, you know, for whatever reason. Honestly, at this point, it feels like maybe you shouldn't have done that. But, you know, at the same time, it left it open for a future season at some point. I hope he doesn't. Just leave it, man. Go make something else rad and awesome like that. Don't. Because the thing is, for all the great shit about that show, you know, you could see the cracks. It was sweaty. You could see the cracks starting to form
as it came to the end.
Yeah, and it's like, oh wow, Dr. Manhattan looks badass, and then he stops glowing, and it's just a guy in a bald cap with blue paint. And I was like, okay,
this is the guy from Arrested Development.
What the fuck's going on? But I really liked the Watchmen. I really like that. I was really excited for the Clone Wars, obviously. I don't have as much time as I want to watch things. I've still not seen The Witcher. I never got around to, you know, what was the one? Golden Compass or whatever it was called.
His Dark Materials.
Yeah. I mean, I just, I'm way behind on so many things. I mean,
you're good on both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd enjoy The Witcher more than Golden Compass at this point, but I feel like maybe Golden Compass might have a higher ceiling, if that makes sense. But
that totally makes sense.
But maybe they'll find their footing. You know, I don't know. But
well,
here you.
The only thing I was also going to mention is, and I was talking to Dan about this earlier. Is I spoke to the. You know, The Last Kingdom just had its fourth season, and the guy who ran the show for the first three seasons stepped away after season three. And it kind of made me think about, like, what if, you know, Benioff and Weiss had stepped away, you know, let's say season five, something like that, and let somebody else kind of take the reins, you know, because I think sometimes the expectations build so high that they kind of get out of control. And I wonder, like what you were talking about with Watchmen, it's like season one was great. Don't ruin it with a season two. You know what I mean? So I wonder sometimes about
Westworld.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah.
Westworld.
Seasons two and three. But yeah. I just wonder about that sometimes. Like, you know, I understand it's your baby, you built it, but then sometimes also could it benefit from stepping away and letting somebody else kind of step in and take it across the finish line or something?
Well, I'm sure that Dan and David can talk more about this, but the other thing about Game of Thrones that made it unique was the cult of personality that formed around Benioff and Weiss and the way that people hyped them up. Because, oh, they're the only ones that George R. R. Martin has told what happens to. And they, you know, they've got this series in the palm of their hands. They're the only ones that can be trusted. And, of course, they locked down every script, you know, and all that shit, and which still didn't matter. Leaks happened. But, like, the cult that formed around them that I think we all played a part of, for sure.
But can we also call bullshit on that? Because I'm betting there's a couple waiters at George R. R. Martin's favorite Mexican place in Albuquerque that were tired of hearing how the end of Game of Thrones was going to happen. You know what I mean?
Like, hey, if you, I'll tell you what happens to Arya if you give me a free flan.
Right. Like, or he's had too many, you know, Mexican martinis at the end of, you know, another Wednesday night, not like finishing Winds of Winter.
Why didn't you just say margarita? Why did you go Mexican martini?
I know, I was just going to ask.
Very specific.
I'm a Mexican martini guy. Okay, I'm sorry. But anyways, so I'm just saying that whole part, like they were the only one bullshit. Like fucking, there's probably 50, 60 people floating around Albuquerque that got the fucking cashier at Walmart, you know, knew what, or the guy who changes his oil. You know what I mean? So like, let's call bullshit on that. But anyways, that's an aside for another
his
day.
Gardner, the guy.
Yeah. Like, give me a fucking break. Give me a fucking break. The guy can spit out 5,000 words about the New York Jets fucking fifth round draft pick, but you think he's not spewing about what happens to fucking John? Give me a break.
You guys, Corey Smith has feelings about George R. R. Martin.
I'm just saying, let's call bullshit when we see.
He bought a railroad.
He bought it. It's good for him.
I've been wanting to ask Smith about that.
Someone put him on the fucking car with a typewriter and make him finish the fucking book. Anyways.
Time to the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
Oh, God, cool. That's so funny. No, okay, so, oh, man, I could sit here and talk about this all night, and I know that we're not going to do that.
That's weird. It's been an hour.
I was going to say, I could talk 2 or 3 more hours about this and my favorite chicken sandwiches, but I'm not going to do that. I would like to, before we sign off, God damn, I wish Isis was here for this, because it reminded me of whenever Cersei died. And Smith, I thought about this whenever you were talking about Cersei being a wasted character at the end. I asked Isis a poignant question after that episode. I said, did you feel sorry for Cersei at the end? Because she was being held by Jaime. She was crying. She didn't want to die. All her kids were dead. And Isis goes, fuck her. Fuck no, I wasn't sad for her. Bitch got what she deserved. Oh my God, I miss Isis. I wish she was here. Anyway, I would like to ask you guys, and I'll end with mine, but I'd like to ask each one of you if you could point out one character from season one to the very last episode that you feel like you didn't get a payoff for. You feel like you missed one character. You feel like you missed a story in. You weren't satisfied with how it happened. And it can be anything from Bran all the way down to the one white with half a leg and no jaw. I don't care. Pick one character that you could find. And Dan, I'll start with you.
Okay, I object to this question. Why are we trying to be so sad and wound-picking
on
and navel-gazing? But okay, gotcha.
Who was your favorite storyline, Dan? How about that?
I was upset that we did not get more of Illyrio Malpatis, the grotesquely fat cheesemonger who housed the Targaryens at the beginning. What cheese did he like? Was he a Brie man? A Gruyere? I wanted to know that. I was sad we didn't get it.
What the fuck is a Gruyere?
It's a kind of cheese.
Was this Dan, or I guess Razor, because you would know, what Dan just said, is that like if you ask someone what was missing from Lord of the Rings and they said Tom Bombadil? Because that's what it kind of sounds like.
Yes, exactly is that. Malpatis is the guy who holds it all together.
All together.
I'm still mad we didn't get Tom Bombadil, and I'm mad that we didn't get the Reckoning of the Shire. I'm sorry. And there's our Lord of the Rings. You brought it up, so congratulations for bringing up the Lord of the Rings.
Nailed it.
Nailed that. Okay, so Dan.
Right at the wire.
Are you going with Ilario for that? Is that your final answer?
Yes, I wanted more cheese.
I like it. It's a good answer. Smith, what about you?
I said it earlier, it's Cersei. I mean, just they wasted that character. I thought it was a phenomenal character. I hated the fucking character.
But what could she have done different? Do you want her to march all the way down to Winterfell and kill all the Northmen right there after they fought the dead? What did you want more?
Just give me more of her other than just standing on the fucking balcony and drinking. Like, I just could not stand how they wasted that character. She was so proactive. You know, she had so many tricks up her sleeve. Season 7, she's thwarting, you know, Danny every step she takes. And it's like, in season 8, she just fucking stood there and watched the Golden Company get fucking lit up like dry leaves. And I couldn't. That was such a great character. And they just wasted her. And it fucking sucks. Instead, we got fucking Bronn, you know, having his threesome and stuff. And it's just like, I mean, no thanks.
Bone, come on, give me something good, because I'm kind of disappointed with these answers.
I needed more Braun threesomes, is what I wanted more of. My answer for what we actually needed is, I guess, how do I phrase this? Night King and Night King adjacent things, like his connection to Bran, yes, his connection to Jon, his connection to the dragons, his connection to magic, just anything magic related, maybe magic should be the answer. I don't know. It's like, it's all the things about the show. You know, I've never read the books. Have all three of you guys read the books? Are you all three book guys?
No.
Yes.
Yes. Is it all three? Yes.
Pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay, it was four or five times.
It was me and Isis that were the Shonleys. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. You are the people that don't know how to read.
The Unsullied, yeah. So we
illiterate, whatever.
Yeah, well, okay, Texas. So we you know, one of the things that really pulled me into the show was the passion of the fans who had read the book. I wasn't going to read the books, but getting to get caught up on the lore. I love lore and magic and all these things that made this universe. That's why people, Dan, when you said, could this be the next Star Wars? Is because, shit, we haven't seen something new with this much lore built into it you could expand on in a real world. I mean, you've got cartoons that are like that, and that's fine. That's a great thing. But, like, a real-world adult fucking thing with this kind of lore that people were into is rare and hard to create. And to have, I don't know if the rumors are true. I don't really want to put words in people's mouth, but the idea that Benioff and Weiss were like, we don't want to mess with magic because they didn't give a shit about that part of the world. And that took so much of the luster away from this last season. Like, still don't know what Bran really was for. We still don't know the night. I mean, like, Bran ended up on the throne, fine. But, like, he could have also easily have been, like, actually, technically speaking, he should, if a Stark was going to end up on the throne, it'd been Bran at the end, regardless of if he was the knight or the whatever the fucking stupid Raven name Man. Is. Raven Man. Fucking, Raven Man. Take
Alabama Man.
Yeah, he was the elder Stark son. So, like, wow, bold statement. But anyway, the Night King, the lack of payoff, and it's not a knock on the Arya thing, the lack of payoff for Bran versus Night King, sub, like, parenthesis, Jon and dragons and Dany, close princess. I felt like that is truly, that is what people soured on this show, on this season, after that episode, and it never recovered. And a lot of the stuff that people, I think Dan called it a snowball effect or something when we were recording live during the season. But, like, if the battle for Winterfell and all that had played out better, had been longer, whatever, like,
had been had brighter.
More build up, right? Then the things that happened in the next episode wouldn't have had such a harsh blowback and the things and so on and so on. Like, I just feel like that was the point of the season where they missed it so hard, because at the end of the day, for eight seasons, the Night King, like, looming was gone. We knew nothing about him. We knew that he was intelligent. We knew that you know what I'm saying. I'm just going to start rambling about
it. No, but you're right. But remember the build up to him? Remember when we saw the flashback when Bran was learning how to be the three-eyed raven and we saw the Night King get made? And we were like, holy fuck, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And before that, when we saw the Night King.
He has a castle.
Yeah, he's got a fucking ice castle. He looks like Darth Maul. He's out there turning babies into fucking White Walkers. This guy's badass. Tell me more about him. And I kind of feel like, maybe sort of, there was this whole thing like, hey, the next Game of Thrones show is going to be about White Walkers. So let's don't talk about White Walkers so much in the finale. I don't know. That's my theory. That's my own personal theory. I'm sure it's bullshit. But anyway, I would love to have learned more about the Night King. I think that's a great answer. I saw another thing. Somebody, like, during the season, the biggest thing of the finale was, who has a better story than Bran the Broken?
Fucking everyone.
Everyone. But Bran could have had a great story if you didn't use him as bait. in that night episode, the long night episode, if he wasn't
Bran's like story was so exciting that they omitted him for an entire season.
Whole fucking season. He wasn't there.
Anyways, go ahead.
He sat there and he warped into Ravens, and you're like, okay, so he's a scout. Okay, so wait, is he abandoning Theon here? Is Theon gonna save him? Is he gonna save Theon by warping into some kind of Raven monster and attack the Night King? No, he just wanted to fucking go watch whatever, you know, Winterfell porn while the Night King showed up at the fucking Godswood. Nothing really important or exciting happened. He became the king. Okay, fine. And he used his green sight to go follow Drogon around, and that was cool too. Whatever, I'm fine with that. I think that I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna sit at my favorite thing is, you know what? Fuck this show for not giving me more wolves. I don't care what it, like I wanted Arya's wolf pack. Yes, I'm gonna say it because I don't really mean this. I don't really mean this answer, but I'm gonna say it anyway because I bitched about it all through the final season. There wasn't enough wolf pack. We got the fan service shot of Ghost charging down right next to what's his name, Mormont, right? And then that's the last we saw of him until he was all like he was missing an ear. And then Jon ruffled his fur in the finale, and that was it. Congratulations. And then where was Arya's wolves? We theorized. We wrote all these posts. Arya's wolves are going to come in here, and they're going to save the day. Oh, look, let's go on Free Folk. Let's look. Somebody leaked that there's going to be a giant wolven army. Oh, look at the trailer. Look at all those little legs. Corey Smith, you and I talked about this for an entire goddamn day. Look at those. Those aren't horse legs. Those are little bitty wolf legs. That's Arya's wolves. They're attacking the fucking Night King. None of that happened.
Nope.
That happened whatsoever.
Thanks for playing.
Listen, we'd love to hear from you guys. Let us know on Twitter how you feel about it. I'm sure there's going to be lots of fun conversations about this. Join us next week for Corey Thelman and I are going to be talking about Star Wars. We're going to talk about the Clone Wars. Yeah, we're going to get into that shit and chop it up. All right. So thanks for listening. We'll log on the board.